Hopefully everybody has on their computer lesson 4, the miracle at Cana. And verses 1 through 12 is Jesus' first miracle. He turned water into wine. And we're beginning chapter 2 of John's gospel, where Jesus will go public with his ministry in a first demonstration of his power and authority. I've often thought I would really love to be somewhere where I could witness Christ's miracle. It would bring me closer to God, but I hate to say I'm close enough, because I would like to get a little closer. But witnessing a miracle is a definite encouragement for the non-believers. Excuse me. Until this time, Jesus' ministry is largely practiced among the disciples of John the Baptist and within the confines of his home area and family. There is little, if any, resistance to Jesus at this point, just as there is little resistance in our efforts to confess Christ, so long as it is confined to the church building and our Christian family. It is when we reveal ourselves publicly that the troubles start, and so it was with Jesus when he began his public ministry. And you know, when I've tried to talk to people about Christ and tell them what a great thing they're missing out on, I've never really been angrily replied to, but maybe I'm fortunate. Maybe I haven't witnessed to enough people yet to find somebody. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. Wedding feasts were a great and a joyous occasion during those times. Life revolved around the religious calendar and family events. The betrothal, or engagement, as we would call it, meant that the couple was legally joined as man and wife, but usually remained with their families until cohabitation was arranged. The wedding feast signaled that the couple would begin actually living together as husband and wife. Many times the groom and his party would parade through the streets in order to fetch his bride and bring her to the wedding feast, for which they would eventually leave to spend their first night together in their home. The feast itself would be an elaborate event and lasted 7 days or more as the guests arrived to witness the couple well. This type of celebration required an ample supply of food and drink. It was such a feast. Jesus was invited along with his disciples in Cana.
Charlie, my understanding is that the groom would typically build a house or another room onto his father's house, and that was where the new couple would live. So the time between engagement or betrothal and the wedding feast would have been the time when he was building this house or new room onto his father's house.
Good thing I didn't have to build a house for her. Carolee may not have ever married me. verses 1 through 3 states that on the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there, and both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to Jesus, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "What does this have to do with us? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says, do it." And does anybody have any suggestions as to what Jesus said? The time has not come. His hour has not come. My hour has not yet come. What did he mean by that?
It was not time for him to be known as the Messiah.
Okay. I can just barely hear you, so I need to turn my volume up a little bit on my computer. It seems like, and we may talk about a little bit later, that Jesus addressed his mother, and he didn't speak to his father. And from that, most of the commentaries that I read mentioned that Joseph had passed away by then. And he, of course, wasn't able to attend. Okay, Dean. Verses 6 through 8, seems like we're buzzing right through this. 6 through 8, we're halfway through this scripture. 6 through 8 says, "Now there were 6 stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification, containing 20 to 30 gallons each. Jesus said to them, 'Fill the water pots with water.' So they filled them up with to the brim. And he said to them, 'Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter.' So they took it to him." Water pots were needed for purification as well as washing of utensils, etc., as was a custom for Jesus before eating. Jesus has then filled with water and then had a sample taken to the host for taste. Note how effortlessly that the miracle was performed. Jesus only intention it, and it was done. Filling these water pots, it says pots, so I would assume there was more than one, and 20 and 30 gallons each. Makes me wonder how many pots they had there. It says there were 6 stone pots set, and was it all 6 of them were filled with water, and then Jesus turned all 6 of them into wine? I would assume so, but it doesn't really make much difference. And to drink that much wine, that party must have been quite large to consume all that wine. And I don't want to get into a discussion of drinking wine, but it seems like if a person drinks too much wine, he can become intoxicated, and that's not good.
Charlie, my understanding is that they that they did drink the wine, but typically wine in those days would have been cut with water. So you'd have a certain amount of wine and a certain amount of water, so that the typical wine that was served in those days, wine is natural fermentation produces wine of about 12% alcohol. And once it's cut, then it would have been about 2% alcohol, which is not heavily alcoholic. It was, that was the way that they kind of, this is not the right word for it, but they treated their water with the wine so that it would be safer for them to drink. They didn't have the kinds of water treatment facilities that we do. So this was the, this was kind of the way that they did that, by adding some alcohol to their water. So yeah, you're right. This would have been something like 120 to 180 gallons of wine for this party that was going on. That's a lot of wine until you realize that it was probably cut. So it was more like they had this much water.
Yeah. And drinking that much, probably what would stop you from drinking much more is that you would be quite full of water and be uncomfortable.
Now, I'm not suggesting that there wasn't alcoholic content in this wine that they prepared. It was alcoholic, but it wasn't. And 12% alcohol is not hard liquor. You know, when we talk about drinking whiskey, we're talking about 30% alcohol. When you talk about drinking wine, 12% alcohol by volume. Beer is usually around 8 to 12% by volume. So yes, that's what they were drinking.
Okay, thanks, Dean. Okay, this, yeah. Verses 9 and 10 says, when the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine and did not know where it came from, with the servants who drew the water knew, head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, every man serves the good wine first, and when the people have drunk freely, then he serves the poorer wine, but you have kept the good wine until then. You know, in this reading that, it sounds like that when they drank their poorer wine, or their good wine, their taste buds became a little bit numbed. But the discussion on wine and its content and its effects on you can take days, which I'm not able to discuss it that long, nor are you willing to listen that long, I'm sure. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. Okay, it seems like, you know, if I was able to turn water into wine, I wasn't a Christian, I would boast about it. You know, look what I did here. But that wasn't anything that Jesus wanted any part of. Because only a few, his mother and a few of the servants, along with his disciples, knew that a great miracle had taken place. Jesus demonstrated his power to a few people without upsetting or overshadowing the happy moment that this group of guests were sharing. I imagine if the whole group knew that the miracle had taken place, it probably would have created some problems within the wedding feast. The miracle would be spoken of for all times, but for that purpose, moment, Jesus limited its impact to accommodate his hosts while providing a witness to his disciples. Okay. Verse 11. This beginning of his signs did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. John notes that this was his first sign. The Greek word for miracle is sign. Now that's about the only Greek I know. The point is that a miracle is not done to amaze, but to rather point to someone or something, or to reveal something. In this case, the sign points to Jesus as someone with supernatural powers. The sign manifests his glory as the God-man. John mentions this. These disciples believed in him because of this sign. A brief show of one of these three strands of his narrative. Okay, Dean, let's move on. After the wedding feast, after this, he went down to Capernaum, he and his mother and his brothers and his disciples, and they stayed there a few days. We see from this verse that the feast was probably a family affair, because even Jesus' brothers were at the event. When I see a family affair listed, talked about, I kind of wonder how big was Jesus's family. But of course, when you have a family affair, oftentimes there are others who do attend also. They have
Charlie, I could just mention, if you've ever been to a wedding in the South,
I haven't.
You don't go to a wedding by yourself. Your whole family goes to a wedding. And it's the same thing with funerals. It's a big deal. And everybody in town goes to the wedding, or everybody goes to the funeral. And people are very upset if they're not invited to something like that. So that's one of the things that I have noticed. Of course, I grew up in the South and then moved to the Northwest. And here we don't do that kind of thing. In Kentucky, where I grew up, if there's a funeral, the family goes to the funeral home and they stay there all day long, and people come and they bring food to the funeral home. and they mingle about, and you sit, then there are tables set up out on the lawn, and people eat dinner there. And we just don't have a conception of the way that these kinds of family things worked, especially living in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay. It sounds like a could turn into quite a gathering. Jesus returns to his home that was in Capernaum. Some think that he may have lived with Peter. Some think that's just a thought. And also some commentary people said there's a possibility that John did not write this gospel, but I cannot see any way how this could possibly not be written by John. If they want to question who wrote what book, the author of Revelations could be questioned also. That is a confusing book, and as I'm going back to the book of Revelations, and I guess Revelations was a vision John received, begins with instructions for him to write to the seven churches located in Asia Minor. So it definitely says that John did write this book of Revelations. But anyway, you can find namesayers everywhere you go, even when you say this is a fact about the only way to convince them that it is a fact is by a miracle, and we don't have that power to do miracles. And for that, I am indeed happy.
Charlie, when you look at parallel discussions of this in some of the other gospels,
mm-hmm.
It says that Mary saw all of this. Doesn't say she said anything about it, but it does say that she laid this up in her heart. This is something that I'm not convinced that Mary completely understood. But if you witnessed this would be something that it would be one of those memories that you would file away and always keep that memory. And when I read the account, there's no big fan, like you said, there's no big fanfare that's associated with this. This is just something that Jesus did because it needed to be done. And I don't know that even...
Well, Mary...
Yeah, I don't know that even the waiters that were serving the wine understood what was going on. I know the head waiter didn't understand it.
No.
The guys who filled the water vats understood what happened.
Maybe. It just says they filled the water vats and then they dipped up some and they took it to the head waiter. So there wasn't even a big to-do in front of the servants.
Mm-hmm.
It was just fill the water vats and this is what happened.
Yes, but the servants then
understood.
And so then they're impressed, but the but they it kept it quiet.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jimmy.
You Mary knew from the Mary knew that Jesus was special because the angel told her, and she remembered all of that. And so that's why she asked him to do it, because she knew he could. And there wasn't anything about whether he could do miracles or not, but she knew he could do it, so because you know she was told. But even his brothers didn't accept him as the Messiah, so she didn't say anything till she, you know, at that time in all probability. And that's why he said it wasn't his time to start to do that, because there was a certain process that he was to do that. And teach and whatever.
And you do see on other occasions when Jesus performs a miracle, he tells the people, don't say anything about it. It's not time for us to say anything about it. I can't imagine that if I had cancer and Jesus healed me and Jesus said, no, I don't want you to say anything about it. I might slip up and accidentally tell somebody what had gone wrong just because I'd be so excited.
Well, they did tell a lot of them.
That's true. They did.
Dean?
Yeah, go ahead, Wes.
Verse 10, it says, everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine. You were speaking about the wine being cut. What is that about?
Well, even when you cut the wine, if you start with really good wine, then you preserve the taste of the good wine. You've just diluted it. But if you serve, and you have to remember, this was a period of time when they did not have the kinds of things that we have that prevent wine from going sour. So wine sours fairly quickly. I don't know the technical timing for that, but wine turns to vinegar is what it does. Fairly quickly if it's not preserved. And now it must be said, because I'm a heart patient, I drink red wine. I drink a glass of red wine every night. That's what my doctor told me to do. And I can tell you, if I don't properly seal the bottle of wine when it's opened, I get about, you can drink a glass of wine out of a bottle for about 4 days. By the fourth day, the wine in the bottle tastes, it's just not as good as it was the first day. And that's with what they've done to preserve the wine today. Back then, they didn't do that. So naturally fermented wine will turn to vinegar, and it happens fairly quickly. It won't hurt you. It still maintains its properties, but it just doesn't taste very good. And I mean, that's speaking from my experience. I open a bottle of wine, pour a glass, and out of a bottle of wine, I get four glasses, so 4 days. And by the fourth day, it's not as good as it was on the first day. And that has to do with the wine oxidizes and, you know, when it's exposed to the air, the wine starts to turn. And so in order to preserve my wine so it doesn't taste so bad, I put a stopper in it and I pump all the air back out of the bottle once the stopper is in it. But they didn't have that technology back then. And still, you know, most true wine connoisseurs, and I had a friend at Eastern who was a wine connoisseur, and he taught me a lot about wine. When he opens a bottle of wine, that's one today. When he opens it, removes the cork, they let it rest for a certain period of time, a couple of hours, and then they drink what they're going to drink that day. And if there's any left over, they pour it out because the taste will have changed. So that's how the head waiter was probably referring to it. You serve the fresh sweet wine initially, and then after people have had some wine, then you serve the stuff that's been open for 3 or 4 days.
Well, thanks, Dean, for your comments.
They don't drink enough to get drunk. It would take an awful lot to do that. And we know it is a sin to drink so much that you're drunk, but you don't have control of yourself at that point. So he said not to drink the red wine. Isn't that right?
Well, in Proverbs, he says, avoid the wine when it moves in the cup. And there is a way to look at wine, and you tilt the glass and then you look at the way the wine runs back down the glass. And that's a way of calculating the alcohol content of the wine. Wine can be consumed before it's completely fermented. And again, remember, natural fermentation yields wine of about 12% alcohol. Now, you can stop the fermentation process and drink the wine at 3% alcohol if that's what you choose to do. And the way that you would do that is to look at the wine in a glass and look. They call that the legs of the wine. So you can look at how it runs back down the glass. It reminded me of when I was a little kid, my grandmother used to make custard. And oh man, that was good. It was all cream, and that's why I have a bad heart now, because I like to drink that stuff. But you could look at custard that my grandmother made on the farm that was made with real cream and compare that to what you could buy in the store. And my grandmother's custard coated the glass, and then it just ran down very slowly. So there were ways to do that with wine as well. I don't know how to do it, but my friend who told me so much about wine, he knows how to do that. He taught me how to buy wine that would help my heart.
Are there any other comments or discussion? I want to thank you all for attending. And especially thank those who added comments. And I think our reading assignment.
Jessica, I stopped sharing, Charlie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the reading assignment would be verses 13. I think it was through 25. Let me look here real quickly. Yep, 13 through 25.